This is KG News Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, February 1st, 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear about the Telluride Airport's shift to sustainable aviation fuel in the latest in our Rocky Mountain Community Radio series on transitions away from fossil fuels. Then it's our latest edition of H2O Radio's This Week in Water, and we'll play our comment line, thoughts from listeners about what they hear on KGNU. At the bottom of the hour, we'll go to BBC News headlines, then it's How on Earth, where journalist and author Florence Williams will discuss the science of heartbreak, grief, and recovery, which she explores in her just-published book, Heartbreak, A Personal and Scientific Journey. At 9 a.m., it's the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, we'll be in Boulder Studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Because of falling cases of COVID-19 and improved hospital capacity, Denver and the metro counties of Adams and Arapahoe will end their indoor mask mandates this week. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock announced yesterday the city will let its mask order expire midnight Thursday for businesses, although the requirement will remain in place for schools and child care centers. The mayor said the city will not rule out future restrictions if cases again spike. The board for the Tri-County Health Department, which covers the counties of Adams and Arapahoe, voted 5-1 last evening to end mask mandates starting the end of the day Friday. Unlike Denver, Tri-County will drop its requirement for both schools and businesses. Larimer County Public Health also announced yesterday its public indoor mask requirement will expire February 12th. The Centers for Disease Control has announced no changes to mask requirements for public transportation and transportation hubs, such as airports. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office released an update yesterday on the investigation determining the cause of the Marshall Fire. According to the department's press release, investigative work such as evidence gathering, photos, interviews, and reviewing information from videos and community tips is nearing completion. Although the investigative work phase is wrapping up, the Sheriff's Office said the conclusions and reports from several experts and labs could take several weeks or even months to come in. The Sheriff's Office reiterated that officials are investigating all potential fire causes, including coal mines, power lines, and human activity. Once the investigation is complete, the Sheriff's Office said it will work with the district attorney to determine if any criminal charges are appropriate. As Colorado lawmakers are in the beginning weeks of the legislative session, three task force groups have released their final recommendations on how the state should spend billions of dollars in federal funding from the American Rescue Plan Act. The panels analyze needs of Colorado residents under the areas of affordable housing, behavioral health, and economic recovery from the pandemic. According to the Colorado Sun, lawmakers will now face the challenge of figuring out how to divvy up the funding, a process that may be even more complex as lawmakers further deliberate funding priorities. The American Rescue Act funding must undergo allocation by the end of 2024 and be completely spent by 2026. Possible allocations from each panel include $697 million for economic recovery and relief, $450 million for behavioral health, and $568 million for affordable housing. The Colorado Sun reports a task force overseen by the Colorado Department of Higher Education has also issued a report on funding investments for the state's workforce. Boulder is considering starting a guarantee income pilot program allowing cash to go to low-earning residents. Under the program, the city will place no restrictions or conditions on participants on where they can spend their money, thus allowing families and individuals flexibility in meeting their needs without categorical restrictions. City officials are aiming to begin the program this year and run the program through 2024. According to Boulder Beat News, city staff did not release details on eligibility and how much money participants would receive, but requested $250,000 to explore the feasibility of the program. City officials are expecting funding for the program to come from dollars allocated under the American Rescue Plan Act. Boulder will receive its second half of $20 million in federal relief this summer. According to Boulder Beat News, City Council will discuss staff recommendations on federal funding beginning February 8th, along with committee recommendations on a possible new library district. Officials from the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission said the state will seek $25 million from a United States Department of Interior fund that provides grant money for states to plug orphaned oil and gas wells. According to the Colorado Sun, the federal government's new infrastructure law passed by Congress in November allocates a total of $4.7 billion for the orphan well program, and 26 states can now apply for the initial round of grants. The Colorado Sun reports the state is eligible to receive an additional $14 million, but officials said the state could not meet a project designation requirement in 90 days and complete plugging within 1 year. State data shows Colorado has 411 orphan wells to plug and 811 orphan sites to remediate. According to the Colorado Sun, the numbers have risen by 70% in the last 4 months, as the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has shut down defunct operators and moved to seize their wells and cleanup bonds. From their own analysis, environmental groups caution there are likely close to 3,000 wells abandoned. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is currently undergoing rulemaking to revise financial assurance rules placed on operators. According to the Colorado Sun, the average historical cost of plugging an orphan well is $93,000. For today's weather, snow will likely start in the late afternoon hours. Boulder and Fort Collins will have highs in the upper 20s, with Denver's temperature reaching 31 degrees. 2 to 4 inches of snow is possible this evening for Denver and Boulder. 5 to 9 inches of snow is expected this evening for Fort Collins. Tonight's lows will be in the single digits for Boulder and Fort Collins, and 12 degrees for Denver. Tomorrow, snow will continue with highs in the teens and wind chill values as low as -2 to -3 degrees for Denver and Boulder, and -8 for Fort Collins. 1 to 4 inches of new snow accumulation is possible tomorrow along the upper Metro Front Range. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 28 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's hard to imagine a carbon-neutral world without considering airplanes. Commercial airlines contribute to about 2.5% of annual global CO2 emissions, but as KOTO's Matt Hoisch explains, some airports are starting to find ways to bring that number down.
It might be hard to tell, but that's the sound of a plane with lower carbon emissions. The aircraft is refueling on the tarmac at the Telluride Regional Airport, which last year began integrating sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, into its operation.
I guess a simple way to explain it, it's non-petroleum. You're not using oil, you're using vegetation, you're using used vegetable oils, those kinds of things, into the manufacture of this fuel.
Kenneth Manpa is Telluride's airport director. According to Manpa, Telluride is one of two airports in Colorado using the fuel. SAF has a lot of upsides. It can reduce aviation emissions by up to 80%. And it's interchangeable with conventional fuel, which helps on the equipment front.
You don't have to change your infrastructure. You don't have to have it in a separate tank or anything else.
The downside?
Well, it's very expensive.
Supply is one factor contributing to that cost. SAF is very limited in the U.S. That's according to Richard Thacker, Director of Integration and Operational Strategy at Atlantic Aviation, a company that services providers across the country.
That's the real challenge with SAF right now. It's not particularly new technology, but again, it is very, very limited in quantity. And so it's very difficult to, you know, get it to markets, especially in the interior portion of the country.
Demand is another factor. A lot of airports, according to Thacker, are asking for SAF.
The requests are coming from coast to coast, and the answer is always the same. We're doing our best to get our hands on as much of supply as we possibly can, but right now it's very limited.
That limited supply also complicates the green aspect of the fuel. Atlantic supplies SAF to Aspen-Pitkin County Airport, the other spot in Colorado using it. Thacker notes they had to be very thoughtful about transporting the fuel almost 1,200 miles to the mountain town.
We didn't want the headline to be "Dirty truck delivers clean fuel." So we made sure that the transport trucks were utilizing renewable diesel to transport the product. And then we did the equation on that and made sure the carbon benefit or the loss of the carbon benefit of the SAF was minimal, and it was.
Several major airlines, including United and British Airways, have used SAF. And there's a chance supply, and therefore cost, will be less of an issue in the future. Last year, the Biden administration announced a goal to ramp up domestic SAF production from the current level of roughly 4.5 million gallons per year to 3 billion by 2030. Dr. Tracy Dodd thinks that sort of top-down push is essential to make aviation green. Dodd is a researcher at the Adelaide Business School in Australia who focuses on decarbonization.
We wouldn't have renewable electricity if it wasn't for government intervention. And I think that airlines have been left holding the baby on this one, and everybody needs to get behind and support them.
But Dodd also stresses more attention from governments starts with more focus from the public.
People are not completely aware of the environmental impact of flying or that there are other options available. And so we need to increase awareness of that. And by doing that, legislators have a stronger mandate to increase regulation, which supports business.
Along the way, Dodd adds, it's important not to greenwash and overstate the environmental benefits of existing green options.
I feel if you were to look at a whole range of websites around sustainable aviation fuel, you would have a false sense of security that things are looking good. This is all positive. We can be carbon neutral. We don't have to make this trade-off. You know, I think that that's not helpful in the community conversation.
Current SAF, Dodd notes, doesn't eliminate carbon from aviation completely. So carbon-neutral flying will take more innovation and leadership. But Dodd also says she's optimistic that by 2050, she'll be able to fly on a plane and produce little to no carbon emissions. In the meantime, Manpa says the Telluride Regional Airport aims to increase its SAF usage over the next decade. The airport currently uses a fuel blend that's about 30% SAF.
So if we can just keep increasing that, if manufacturing can scale up, we're first in line.
There's certainly no shortage of incentives. As climate change intensifies, a warmer world could dent the winter and summer tourism ecosystem that draws planes and passengers to the airport in the first place. For KOTO and the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition, I'm Matt Hoisch.
Time now for This Week in Water with H2O Radio's Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
A setback for oil and gas. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Last week, a judge canceled the sale of 80 million acres of oil and gas leases in the Gulf of Mexico, citing climate change. The ruling said that the federal government failed to consider the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that would result from the development.
The decision was a major victory for environmentalists who had sued the Biden administration to block the largest ever auction for drilling rights in the Gulf's history. The auction came just 4 days after the COP26 climate conference last fall in Glasgow, Scotland, where the president promised that the U.S. would lead by example in tackling the climate crisis.
Biden officials had argued that the administration was legally compelled to go forward with the leases because of a decision by a different judge in Louisiana. However, The Guardian reports that even a Justice Department memo showed that the claim was untrue.
The current administration has issued more drilling permits on public lands than former President Trump. According to the Washington Post, the Department of Interior is now planning to sell rights to drill on more than 200,000 acres in Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, and other western states by the end of March, plus 1 million acres off the coast of Alaska.
About a year ago, a computer hacker tried to contaminate a drinking water system in a small Florida city by gaining access to a remote monitoring program.
Once inside the utility's computers, he tried to adjust the amount of sodium hydroxide to 100 times its normal level, which could have poisoned people. The intrusion was detected and no one was harmed.
But the Florida attack was only one of at least four last year on treatment facilities. Business Insider reports that water plants in Nevada, Maine, and California were also hacked with ransomware.
The intruders took control of monitoring and treatment systems. A successful hacker could theoretically stop faucets running, in addition to contaminating supplies, as computers are being used increasingly in the whole process.
Now, federal authorities have announced a plan to deliver cybersecurity technology to water utilities across the country, as the Biden administration broadens its efforts to thwart attacks, including those against electric utilities and gas pipelines.
There are about 150,000 public facilities in the U.S. that provide 300 million people with safe drinking water, some with little or no cybersecurity expertise. The administration's efforts will first focus on those that serve larger populations. One image we will likely associate with the pandemic will be the number of ships waiting to dock in ports like Los Angeles and Long Beach as supply chains choke with huge demand for goods combined with labor shortages to unload and haul away all the stuff people buy.
Those container ships burn dirty bunker fuels as they idle, which add climate-warming gases to the atmosphere and send toxic air pollution into nearby urban areas.
A new venture aims to cut those emissions by offering offshore charging stations. A company called Stillstrom, owned by the shipping giant Maersk, has developed technology that will allow vessels to operate as they idle by connecting to a buoy powered by wind energy.
They've partnered with the major wind developer Ørsted and will test a prototype buoy in the North Sea this summer. The companies plan to make the intellectual property for the buoys publicly available to encourage adoption of their system.
Eventually, the plan is to install up to 10 buoys at around 100 ports by 2028 that the company says will cut greenhouse gas emissions by 5 million tons per year while eliminating particulate matter and reducing engine noise that disturbs ocean life.
Given that international shipping is growing rapidly and contributes 3% of global emissions, decarbonizing the maritime industry is welcome climate news.
And finally, redwood forests of the Lost Coast, about 5 hours north of San Francisco, used to be the sacred lands of several indigenous tribes until they were forcibly removed by European settlers.
Much of the area was logged, and native people were denied access to land they had stewarded for generations. That is, until last week, when the nonprofit Save the Redwoods League reunited the forest with descendants of its original inhabitants.
The group announced they were transferring guardianship of the 523-acre property to the Intertribal Sinkeon Wilderness Council, a consortium of 10 tribes that protects traditional lands and waters.
The land will be renamed Te'eladen, which translates to Fish Run Place in the Sinkeon language, an acknowledgement of its sacred meaning to native people.
The property contains 200 acres of old-growth coast redwood, as well as second-growth redwood, Douglas fir, oak, and a lush understory of huckleberry and elderberry. The ecosystem supports coho salmon, steelhead trout, and northern spotted owl, all listed under the Endangered Species Act.
The purchase of the property was fully funded by Pacific Gas and Electric in their program to mitigate environmental damage it's caused.
That's it for This Week in Water. Support comes from Wright Water Engineers, providing water resource engineering in Colorado and beyond for more than 60 years. Projects, services, and resumes are online at WrightWater.com.
And now we check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who shared their thoughts on what they hear on KGNU.
Hello, KGNU. I'm calling up to complain. What the hell's happened to my radio station? It's been a little while since I've listened. I've been out of town and out of state. And I put the KGNU app in my phone. The first thing I am is hit with an in-app ad. I thought, that's got to warm a melt. So a couple of days later, this morning, I turned it on, and there's this in-app ad. What the hell is that? What's going on at my radio station? I don't know. You know, it seems to me like we've got a money problem. Seems like we're addicted to pledge drives, and we're addicted to money. that we need to go back to an all-volunteer staff. I know that'll never happen. But this money thing, it's greed. It's what it is. Pledges here, pledges there. You've trained your DJs to beg for money during the program. Begging, begging, begging all the time. I can't believe you guys.
I am calling in response to the discussion during the Friday, January 28th, 2022 Connections program about whether Joe Rogan or Neil Young are correct and which one should be removed from Spotify. I am so upset about this type of discussion. I'm right and you're wrong. The Constitution gives us freedom of speech and freedom of the press. The U.S. government censorship of information just because it does not agree with their party line is unprecedented in this country. The mainstream media has convinced half of the U.S. public that censorship is good. Please think about the big picture, people. These policies are destroying our country and what was left of our democracy. Why are we as a people not strong enough to hear both sides of important issues? Why is the U.S. government, social media, and the mainstream media trying to censor all information that does not support their decisions and actions? Why are you, listeners and staff of KGNU, repeating this call for censorship? If Neil Young wants to remove his music from Spotify, he can do that. But it should never be a question of his music or Joe Rogan's show. If people don't agree with Joe Rogan's guest, then do not watch his show. In America, he has a constitutional right to choose his guest, and they have a constitutional right to present their scientific information and their professional opinions. We are well on our way to fascism unless we stop this unfounded censorship. Thank you. I'm not leaving my name and number because you often broadcast it. That's all I'll say. Bye.
Hey there. I'm commenting about the phone system at KGNU. It seems as though it's been an ongoing problem for perhaps more than a year where KGNU's call-in programs have that severe limitation of the phone system not working correctly week after week. And it behooves KGNU to find someone and some funding to really just get this problem solved once and for all and make it a priority so that, you know, we can just get past this technical limitation. So that's my two cents. Thanks.
Hello, I'm calling about Joe Edelstein's program today, Friday, about the coming end of democracy. And I want to point out that it was predicted, and it's predicted in Nancy McLean's book, Democracy in Chains, came out in 2017. She discovered papers and a plan between Charles Koch and James Buchanan at James Mason University after James Buchanan died. And the plan is exactly what is happening. And it has to do with a detailed plan, which Charles Koch said was fighting he had what he needed. And with all the money that he has, he set up think tanks, he set up all kinds of things, and everything that is done, he said, has to be done secret so that people don't know what is happening. And that is the problem. That is why we are losing our democracy.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you've heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Comments longer than 90 seconds may be edited for brevity in order to give everyone who leaves a message a chance to speak. And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Matt Hoisch, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and Shannon Young for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.